This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every weekday morning at 9:30, a celebrity of some sort rings the opening bell and triggers a cacophony on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange as traders shout buy and sell orders. For more than 200 years now, this Wall Street institution has served as a nerve center of the U.S. economy, but now a combination of technology, scandal, and new regulation promises dramatic changes in the way business is done and at the stock exchange itself. After fending off the inroads of electronic rivals for years now, the New York Stock Exchange announced plans to merge with one of them, Chicago-based Archipelago Holdings. The new NYSE Group is to be public, for-profit company that can offer faster, more efficient, more transparent, and less expensive services by computer. Traders in the old outcry auction system will still be available for especially large or tricky trades, but many suspect that the days of the floor may now be numbered. Later in the program, a muckraking blogger is outed amid allegations of fraud. Poetry and foetry. But first, the digital revolution hits Wall Street. Whether you're a small-time investor or a major player, a broker, trader, or interested observer, call us with questions about how this will affect the institution, the economy, and your life. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Michael Santoli, senior editor at Barron's Magazine, who joins us by phone from his office in New York. Nice to have you back on the program.
Oh, glad to be here. Thank you, Neil.
Today's Wall Street Journal said this proposed merger highlights the tectonic shifts in the business of operating stock markets. Is this really so dramatic?
It is pretty dramatic. I mean, I think what it mostly says initially is that the New York Stock Exchange under John Thain, it's a relatively new CEO, has stopped its world of denial. I mean, for a long time it sort of denied that the all electronic type of model had any real place, and they really stood by their way of doing business. I think a lot of things have made them move in this direction. Although I don't believe that on a day-to-day basis, anytime soon, you're going to see the sort of elimination of the sort of human-based, you know, floor trader. I think it actually buys them some time to effectively see how this is all going to shake out, and they can now, with the electronic market that they're merging with, they can effectively be agnostic as to how the markets evolve from here on. They can do it the old way or the new way.
And so, depending on what happens, inevitably, though, isn't there going to be a shift, more and more business going to the computer?
There will be more and more going to the computer. My view is that what will happen is the market will be divided between certain types of stocks, the ones that are very actively traded, the ones that are very large, that are very easy to find buyers and sellers for, will probably migrate more and more to the electronic market, simply because that's the most efficient way and low-cost way of doing things. But I do think that there's a huge cluster of stocks, and it probably numbers well more than 1,000 or 2,000 stocks, where there still is going to be a place for the human to interact. Now, I should point out that most electronic systems still do have a person somewhere, whether it's at a computer screen or on a floor, who is sort of an intermediary when markets get particularly active or when there's lots of news. So it's not as if the computers themselves govern the trading, and I do think there is a place for the auction system that the New York Stock Exchange uses. I do think, though, oddly enough, because it's the ultimate blue chip exchange, it seems odd that they will most likely have their role most pronounced in smaller, less heavily traded stocks.
Now, there have been a few scandals on Wall Street in the past year or two. I think a group of traders were indicted just last week. Is this system going to protect investors better?
Well, I don't know that. You know, it's hard to say. I have a feeling that those indictments and a lot of the sort of controversies that have arisen are out of the what's called the specialist system. These are the people who are assigned to trade individual stocks on the floor there. I think that basically they've been on their best behavior for a couple of years now, simply because the writing's been on the wall, that essentially the scrutiny was very heavy. So will this particular merger protect them any better? I don't necessarily think so. One interesting aspect of this deal is that that the regulatory arm of the New York Stock Exchange is going to be effectively separated out from the business operations and will be a nonprofit entity that will oversee the markets. That, if anything, is potentially a positive development simply because it removes at least a perceived conflict when the regulatory arm was within the business operations.
This merger will have to be approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission. First indications are pretty positive, but that one aspect, the investigatory aspect, that could cause some questions.
It certainly could cause questions. What's interesting is that the New York Stock Exchange has guarded that regulatory role rather zealously over the years, which is hard to understand in a business sense because it's an expensive and sort of energy-consuming project, but I think they felt that it gave them a sort of authoritative stance on the industry. I don't think there'll be a very big fight if the SEC wants to remove the regulatory arm entirely. That's just my impression.
How can you have this new company, NYSE Group, this is going to be a publicly traded company, not a nonprofit as it is now. Isn't that an inherent conflict of interest? The company itself is going to be traded?
You know, interesting. It's hard to say if there's any real conflict. And I mean, by one token, you know, Merrill Lynch is a regulated entity. It's been publicly traded on the New York Stock Exchange for a long time. It's a member of the New York Stock Exchange. So you've had this kind of, people playing both sides for some time now. I also will point out that the path in this direction was sort of blazed by the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which is a futures exchange, which went public a couple of years ago and has done extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it does not list its stock on its own market, but it seems as if the safeguards are probably going to be in place. The New York Stock Exchange has not really been run as a for-profit entity. I think it's going to be a significant cultural transition that they're going to have to make to actually run not as a membership organization driven by consensus, but as a shareholder-focused company that's supposed to be going for highest returns.
And those people who have seats on the stock exchange, the members, before they were members, and there was a nebulous idea of how much those seats were worth. Now they're going to make a lot of money off of this, aren't they?
They will make some money off of this. You know, it's interesting. They you always knew how much they were worth in the sense of how much the last seat sold for, and the seat prices peaked at about $2.7 million each, I believe, shortly after the market top in 2000, and they've gone down as low as, I believe, $975,000. So you can see the trend was basically negative for a while. They've bounced up when people thought recently that something more was going to be done. It appears now that those seats have an effective value of somewhere in the close to $3 million range, best case scenario.
Well, let's get some callers involved in the conversation. If you'd like to join us, if you have questions about how this is going to work and what's going to be done, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Max, who's calling from New York City.
How are you? It's Max, but it's okay. How's everything going?
I said Max, but go ahead. That's all right.
Sorry. I was a former broker. I used to own a brokerage firm, NASDAQ, not New York Stock Exchange member.
Mm-hmm.
I was barred from the industry, and I really believe it's been a long time coming that the New York Stock Exchange should become automated. I think any time the more automation that you get and the more transparency that you see, the less likelihood for fraud, and most importantly, the person who really ends up getting hurt is the average investing public.
So you see this as changing it, making it less of an old boys club.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, when you stated, I believe your guest stated that the seats topped out of about $2.7 million in the market.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, it was a license to steal money. You had trading done on eighths and quarter points where institutional market makers were making a ton of money hand over fist, really doing absolutely nothing. There was a wide array of ways to make money, and the way to make money is it's a zero-sum game on Wall Street. Somebody wins, somebody loses, and the person who would normally lose was the average investing Joe public.
Well, Mike Santoli, is Max right? Is this going to be more transparent and more available to more people?
It probably will. I will say I think that the sort of scenario that he describes was definitely the case a while back. And as I say, I think that that tax, and I call it a tax, the middlemen basically did have sort of a no-lose situation for a long time. They had a sort of built-in layer of profits that they enjoyed for years. That has largely gone away. I will point out the specialists as a group last year did not make any money. So in other words, there's already been enough change, and a lot of that change has come by way of stocks are now traded in penny increments. There's a little bit less the middleman can make on that. And also, frankly, a lot of large investors have made it their business to go in and try to squeeze costs. So I think that the trends have been in that direction for a while, and this certainly will further those patterns.
Max, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
So joining us now is Bill Klein, Global Managing Partner for the Capital Markets Practice at Accenture, a global consulting and technology firm. He joins us from his office in Pawleys Island, South Carolina. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thanks very much.
What's your reaction to this news?
Well, I think it's probably the single most significant event in the NYSE's history, and I think it really shows a lot about the leadership that Mr. Thain has shown since he took over as CEO. Of course, the NYSE resisted electronic trading for a long time, and that was certainly counter to the trends that we see in the rest of the world. So I think bringing the constituencies, and in particular the floor brokers and specialists, along to recognize the importance of electronic trading not only shows leadership internally, but also shows that he's been listening to his customers, and in particular the large institutional investors who wanted to trade faster, more electronically, and with more certainty of execution. I think ARCA brings them all of that.
A lot of us have money in those large institutional investors, our 401k plans, our pensions, and that sort of thing. Would this affect those?
I think that concentration of liquidity is actually a good thing for the industry. In the late 90s, with the NASDAQ reforms, we saw a lot of fragmentation in the NASDAQ market. We saw the growth of ECNs and alternative trading systems. Now, largely, NASDAQ has been reconsolidated, and NASDAQ themselves bought an ECN, Brute, and are rumored to be in the market to buy Instinet from Reuters. I think with one deal, and I think it's a very savvy deal, the NYSE acquired one of the best electronic trading systems out there. They positioned themselves for growth in options trading and exchange-traded funds and new products. They go public, and they eliminate a competitor. So quite a savvy deal to my eye.
Well, we're going to take a brief break now, and then we'll continue talking about the New York Stock Exchange's plans to sell its own shares and transform itself into, at least partially at the beginning, an electronic exchange. How is this going to affect your life and your money? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the New York Stock Exchange and its digital aspirations. With us are Mike Santoli of Barron's Magazine and Bill Klein, Global Managing Partner for Accenture's Capital Markets Practice. Of course, you're invited to join us if you own stock and have questions about how this might affect your holdings or your future plans. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And Mike Santoli, I was going to ask you about reaction to this news on Wall Street itself. I do note that the stock market is up more than 175 points at the moment, so clearly panic is not the word.
Not at all. No, I wouldn't necessarily attribute the big gain in the overall market to this news, although I do think that there is a generally positive feeling toward it. I mean, just for one example, Archipelago stock is up about 50% today. So people really do think that for the players in the industry, this actually is a rational move. So I think that basically a lot of folks on Wall Street who do business here every day think that it's an overdue measure that the New York Stock Exchange is effectively jogging itself into sort of the next era.
Here's an email question from John Comley in Hercules, California. Will a small trader now be able to watch online in real time how a big broker is behaving on any trading day or time? Bill Klein?
Well, I think ARCA certainly gives more transparency into trading activity than the NYSE model did. And, you know, this is one of the things that investors really seek. Best execution has been an important topic in the industry, and it's been debated quite a lot. Of course, in response to that, the NYSE announced their hybrid market structure, merging electronic trading with the floor. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But ARCA certainly brings a new way to get orders into the NYSE, and I think to the degree that they collaborate on their business model, as they've announced they're going to do, I think it certainly gives investors more insight into the market and what's happening and more transparency into the order book.
As this business has evolved over the past quarter century, really, the market has become much more of a Main Street business as well as a Wall Street business. Is this going to accelerate that trend?
Well, I think that we have seen a lot of democratization of trading activity. And this is certainly a way to move into the future. You mentioned earlier the regulatory issues that have arisen at the NYSE in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one nice thing about electronic trading is that the computer is a very dispassionate arbiter, and it's really bringing buyers and sellers together. So I think the combination of electronic trading with the floor-based model gives the NYSE a chance to really differentiate from other exchanges and other competitors. And to the degree that the floor still is seen by investors and traders as delivering real value, I think it could be a very important part of the exchange. But the jury is still out on that.
Let's get another caller in. This is Gail calling from Fort Lauderdale in Florida.
Yes, hi there. My question is, as I understand it, the stock exchange is a nonprofit organization, or has been. When a nonprofit converts or ceases to exist, it's supposed to give its assets to another nonprofit. How will this work in this situation?
Mike Santoli, any help on that?
Well, no, that's not really the case here. I mean, they basically will, in the process of the merger, convert to a for-profit corporation. And what they're effectively doing is they're giving their members an allocation of cash that they have within the organization, and they're also giving them stock in the new company. And that, in effect, is going to privatize the nonprofit. Now, I mean, this is a not-for-profit organization, just to be clear. It's not something that was meant for the sort of charitable use of any particular beneficiaries. It was effectively regulated as a not-for-profit, so it's not as if it has to transfer its assets to another nonprofit.
And I saw this described in the Wall Street Journal today as a reverse merger. In fact, Archipelago, the profit-making company, would be taking over the New York Stock Exchange.
In a technical way, that's what's going on, although the members of the current owners of the New York Stock Exchange will own 70% of the resulting company, and 30% will be owned by the Archipelago shareholders.
Okay. Gail, thanks very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye. Bill Klein, the question a lot of people are going to have is, most people are small investors, how is this going to affect them?
Well, I think electronic means of entering orders are a lot more understandable and transparent to small investors than the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. So I think in that sense, it's going to, I think, reassure small investors that the NYSE is a good place to do business.
Bill Klein, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bill Klein, Global Managing Partner for the Capital Markets Practice at Accenture, a global consulting and technology firm. He was with us by phone from his home in Pawleys Island in South Carolina. For another view on this development, we're joined now by Julie Niemann. She's a stock market analyst at R.T. Jones Capital Equities in St. Louis, Missouri, and she joined us by phone from there. Good to speak with you.
Thank you, Neil.
Now, you've been a longtime critic of the New York Stock Exchange. Tell us why, briefly.
Well, basically, in 1987, after a huge, huge fallout in the New York Stock Exchange, I had the opportunity to see a lot of the workings, and none of it made a heck of a lot of sense to me at that time. And the opportunity for manipulation basically was there. The specialist, I think Max called in, the specialist does basically have a license to steal. They have inside information, they operate on inside information, and they're charged with maintaining an orderly market, which does not always happen. It was basically a good old boys network, and they were taking care of members to the detriment of investors. So the problems have been long standing.
And does this change fix that?
Well, to some extent, you know, Thane is the first one to embrace the obvious. No one makes money when you refuse to become competitive, and they haven't been competitive for some time. They do 80% of all the New York listed stocks, but 20% has gone electronic, and electronic basically has been eating their lunch for some period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So throw on top of that the fact that you've got problems with specialist skimming, manipulation allegations, grassless paycheck, you name it. You've got a confluence of things that finally force them to do something. So this basically is they're realizing the obvious thing, and now they're doing it.
Now, John Thane, the new head of the New York Stock Exchange, used to be with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs owns a big chunk of Archipelago, which is involved in this merger. Is this a coup by Goldman Sachs?
Well, they're also doing the underwriting, and they own one of the floor traders or the floor specialists. So they're losing on one side, but they're more than making it up on the other side.
Now, does this mean that the New York Stock Exchange is – how is this going to change the market's incentive? I mean, you're going to have – is this going to make it a 24-hour market, 365 days a year?
I think eventually we're moving toward black box trading in a global economy. It will be 24 hours or just a few hours in between, especially as the markets in Japan and overseas become even more developed than they already are. Basically, it gives the New York Stock Exchange the opportunity to trade virtually anything. And right now, they're just restricted to stocks. Now they'll be able to trade anything.
Including much smaller stocks than they can now trade.
Yes, they will really take on the NASDAQ as being the very heavy competition right there. NASDAQ currently is going after Instanet. Good news, bad news on that. Right now, you're going to get real cost efficiencies with both organizations getting larger. But ultimately, that's going to be less competition, too. So after a few years, I would not be a bit surprised to see costs kind of stabilize, if you will, and go up a little bit because of lack of competition.
Mm-hmm. Mike Santoli, let me bring you in on this as well. We saw earlier, I think it was earlier this year, an offer by a German firm to take over the London Stock Exchange. Is this kind of consolidation going on around the world?
It is, yes. Now, effectively, as Bill said earlier, I mean, it makes all the sense in the world to have a centralized venue for lots of trading to take place. Effectively, trading begets trading. So, yes, it is a trend. The European trend has actually been more dramatic. It's really gone almost entirely electronic in a fairly short period of time. They don't quite have the sort of entrenched culture here that we have at the New York Stock Exchange. So, yeah, it's certainly a global phenomenon.
Let's get another caller on the line. Patty joins us from Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Oh, hi. Yeah, my question is the volatility on the daily basis.
And how this might affect that. Julie Neiman, is computers running this? Is it going to add to the volatility of the market?
It's going to become much more stock and specific, industry specific. Stocks that have very thin trading volume are going to become considerably more volatile, simply because there will be more disclosure on who's in there. And actually, there's a need for the NASDAQ and for the old-fashioned auction market when you have stocks that are very thinly traded and are difficult traders. But on the big boys, you're going to see a substantial reduction in volatility.
How come?
Because you have great liquidity. Large traders can get in and out of a stock without moving it much at all. You're going to have much more matching capability. So you're not going to have as much informational impact with a trade that you typically try to read into it right now.
Okay, Patty, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, let's talk now with, this will be Jocelyn. Jocelyn is calling us from SIO. Am I pronouncing that right, in Oregon?
You are.
Okay, go ahead, Jocelyn.
Thank you. I think the electronic factor is wonderful, but I still question how a firm going for profit is going to affect individual traders.
Julie?
Well, a profit motive really is kind of a sanitizing thing. Basically, there will be a reporting entity now. They have to report just like any other corporation does to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and their books are open for audit. So when there are abnormalities or accounting problems, this basically will come out. Now, obviously, it doesn't come out in real timely fashion. We just went through a year and a half of this cleansing factor, but ultimately it does. So the fact that there will be a reporting entity really helps in terms of honesty.
Uh-huh. And so will we see a rise, will we see cost rise to us in our trading?
No, I think we're going to see trading costs in the near term go down. There's still a lot of competition, and cost efficiencies are there. You won't be employing this whole army of specialists out there. You're going to see the whole specialist aspect continue to shrink, and cost competition will be there. It's not going to drop much more because it's very competitive right now, but it will stabilize as they get their internal costs down. So you're not going to see it rise as rapidly either.
All right. Thank you very much.
And thanks for the call, Jocelyn.
Bye.
Do you, Julie, we heard earlier that there's going to be a dual system for a while as more and more shifts to the computerized trading. Do you think this spells the end for the floor trading system?
I think ultimately you're going to see it substantially shrunken. You know, it's an orderly exit is what you're basically looking at. The handwriting has been on the wall for many years. If you take a look at the American Stock Exchange, that's something that should have died years ago. The specialists do not maintain orderly markets or any kind of inventory, and they have the same inside information. Trading has moved away from the American Stock Exchange because basically investors get hosed. So it's moving toward the markets where you have good efficiencies here. But the specialists on the New York Stock Exchange, you had all these continued problems, and you got better execution in black box trading, and it's moving toward that direction. So I think inevitably you're going to see a substantially shrunken role for the specialists. Not many will be left, and they will be working stocks that are difficult to trade.
And when you say black box trading,
electronic,
digital trading, computerized
right.
trading. We're talking about big changes in store at the New York Stock Exchange. A merger still has to be approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission, but the New York Stock Exchange is getting together with an electronic exchange called Archipelago that's going to change the nature of the way the New York Stock Exchange does business, affecting this economy, indeed the world. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And wait a minute, here's an email question. Could you please explain exactly what seats on the New York Stock Exchange are, their purpose, and how they work? This from Joe. Mike, can you help us out?
Sure. Seats, it's actually an anachronistic name. It used to be that literally when you were a member of the New York Stock Exchange, meaning you were permitted to trade on the floor, you actually had a literal seat that overlooked the floor of the exchange. Right now what a seat refers to is effectively membership rights. You can buy the right to do business on the floor as a broker or a specialist. Right now there are about 1,300 seats on the New York Stock Exchange, so it's a finite number of members that are allowed to join, and right now those seats are going to effectively be liquidated. They're going to those seat owners are going to effectively get stock in the new company as well as some cash.
Well, let's look at an historical perspective. Joining us now is Charles Geist, a finance professor at Manhattan College, a Wall Street historian. He's with us by phone from his office in Riverdale in New York. Nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you.
Stock exchange goes back a 212 years, a 1792. The open outcry system, it served well for many, many years since the beginning?
Yes. Excuse me. Yes, indeed. It's been used both on the stock exchanges and the commodity futures exchanges in Chicago and New York since their origins in the New York Stock Exchange's case, 1792, or its predecessor, and the other exchanges around that Civil War.
And I'm wondering, this system has evolved, obviously, a great deal since then, but you would think that all the sophistication in the world, the digital would outpace it almost instantly.
Well, I think that probably I just sort of got into the last part of your last guest conversation, but mm-hmm. I think the digital actually has done that. It's rather remarkable when you think about it that the largest equities market in the world, being the New York Stock Exchange, trading in the most what we assume to be the most vibrant economy in a free market economy, has yet a 19th, even if you will, a late 18th century institution organized not much differently, except for the high-speed electronics, trading stocks of massively publicly traded companies. It's almost as if it were an old mercantilist hangover in the modern world.
Let's get another caller on the line. Brent is with us. Brent's calling from Lansing, Michigan.
How are you doing today?
Okay.
My question is, as a computer-savvy person, the first thing I thought about when I heard your discussion was, how does the security, like hackers, play into this whole deal, I guess?
Yeah, Mike Santoli, in an age of terrorism, and I guess we could be talking about electronic terrorism, is this going to be vulnerable to attack?
Well, certainly no more vulnerable than it was yesterday, simply because it's the way that orders get down to the floor is not going to really be that different. So, in other words, there's computer networks connecting everything already, so I don't believe there's going to be any great change. It's not as if we're really transitioning to a new network or system. I will point out that even though it seems as if the floor trader, the floor specialist, is the person who's central in the New York Stock Exchange, they actually only directly participate on one side or another of a trade in less than 10% of all trades right now. So, to a large degree, we're talking about things getting down there in electrons, not by voice.
And we saw, and again, Julie Neiman, after 9/11, Wall Street diversified a lot more physically, geographically. It's not Wall Street just anymore.
Well, it absolutely had to. When they realized that they had such a concentration of time and talent and money in one single spot, and was that exposed to terrorism, diversification became of necessity. This was already happening because it's a global market. There are a number of organizations that had spread their trading down mostly to California to take advantage of Eastern trading. So it was in process. New York was just the slowest to follow.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
No, that's for Julie Neiman. She's leaving. You're staying. Julie Neiman's a stock market analyst at RT Jones at Capital Equities in St. Louis, Missouri, and joined us by phone. We appreciate your time today. And today we're talking about what's ahead for the New York Stock Exchange as it absorbs an electronic exchange and promises to change the way it does business. Our guests are Mike Santoli, a senior editor at Barron's Magazine, and Charles Geist, a professor of finance at Manhattan College and an historian of Wall Street. And Charles Geist, let me ask you, the New York Stock Exchange has resisted the pressure to go electronic before. How come?
Well, that may be a slight misconception. I mean, it is very electronic. I mean, there's an awful lot of networking going on there, transmission of prices. But its model is extremely old, as we said before. And it's that old model that seems to be more entrenched than anything else. In other words, I don't think that anyone there is particularly opposed to electronic trading as long as the old model remains. And unfortunately, right now, from the basis of what we heard yesterday, the status quo seems to be at least being kept for a bit. I mean, obviously something there is going to change. But this old model of the open outcry system using the specialist, all the problems that that can create as well as the benefits that it has engendered over the years, is something which is very difficult to sort out.
And Mike Santoli, is part of the motivation to do this now, I was reading about a regulatory change that might have exposed the New York Stock Exchange to more of its electronic rivals.
Absolutely, yes. It seems as if all these trends are coming together. There is a new regulatory scheme coming into place that would effectively have removed some of the protections that the New York Stock Exchange system enjoyed. In other words, they were permitted to sort of take longer to execute trades if, in fact, they could provide the best buy or sell price, and that allowed the specialist to participate a little bit more. So, yes, it seems as if that was one of the big motivators here. I will also point out, however, that Archipelago is going to have life get more difficult for it as well, simply because with NASDAQ buying Instinet, it's effectively a commodity business. It's simply a platform, an electronic platform for orders to come together. It did not really have a competitive advantage. And so I do think that both sides see the virtues of sort of huddling together and effectively trying to make 1 + 1 equal a little bit more than 2.
Let's talk now with Mike, and Mike is calling us from St. Louis.
Hi, Neil. And, I had a question about market stability. A few years ago, some French trader or some European trader accidentally hit the keyboard with his elbow and traded literally 100 million things and disturbed the market for a day. I wonder what kind of protections against that and really about the stability of having so many people have such instant access to that information is out in the world now instantaneously. Are they going to have limits on the market, or is it going to be a limited market like it has been?
I don't know. Charles Geist, can you help us out on that?
No, that's a very real problem. In fact, I mean, there's been other cases of that. We tend to overlook that sort of thing. There's a lot more people there who have direct access to where that price is being made than simply the specialist, and maybe that is one of the reasons that we have to go slowly, or the stock exchange has to go slowly here to make sure that it's doing the right thing, because basically, I mean, it might go back to a question of security or just chicanery or whatever it is that someone can actually get in there by hook or by crook, or a rogue trader, for instance, and just put an order in which may be completely out of the box for everyone else. And I think that that's one of the things that actually Mr. Thain is going to have to work out, because, I mean, he's aware of it. He's also a technical guy as president of the New York Stock Exchange. I think it's a real fear. I'm sure that everyone would say, on the other hand, that it only happens rarely, but rarely would be too much in the marketplace, which as was just mentioned, has become highly commoditized and is going to be live for most of the trading day and probably after hours as well. So that's a concern.
After hours as well. So this is going to be extending through time and through the daytimes.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks very much for the question. I guess all of us have the experience of hitting a reply all by mistake. few of us spend that kind of money doing it, though. Here's an email question that I'm not sure I quite understand. I'm hoping you guys can help me out on this. This from Patty. My husband swears that naked short selling will be the downfall of the market. Is this something your guests can speak to? Mike Santoli, what's naked short selling? And is
naked short, just to explain, a short sale means that a trader borrows some stock and sells it, hoping that the stock goes down in price and then they can buy back the stock and repay the loan at a lower price. It's a way to make profit from stocks going down. What naked short selling means is that somebody effectively sells the stock short without arranging to borrow it first. It's kind of a technical issue here. You're supposed to arrange to borrow it first. I will note that there's actually a few measures in place recently to try to crack down on the practice. It happens mostly in smaller, more speculative stocks. I will say that it is a constant complaint of small investors who like to think that there are big sinister forces knocking the market down. I mean, I think it's an issue, but it's not a real driving force in the way the market operates.
Well, thanks to you both. We appreciate your time today. That was Mike Santoli, senior editor at Barron's Magazine, with us by phone from his office in Manhattan. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Charles Geist, thank you for your time today.
Anytime. Thank you.
Charles Geist is a professor of finance at Manhattan College and also the author of Undue Influence, How the Wall Street Elite Put the Financial System at Risk. And he was with us by phone from his office in Riverdale, New York.